Good, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Hey, Rob, say hi to Andreas.
How do you do, Andreas?
Well, thanks.
Rob, Andreas is the gentleman that I'll let Sean and Claudia explain the 12-4-2 Supernova NAP orientation training that he went through. But he was a quick adopter, and I thought maybe you would enjoy hearing him share a success story with you about how it's changed his practice and his view on his career and everything. But the reason he's here is that we've talked about needing some more bandwidth and somebody that we could trust to help us with some of the clients and accounts and things that just don't quite fit the ideal strategy. And we're going to start to work Andreas into that role. So I wanted him to have a chance to meet you. He read your book. That was, I think, step number one in the orientation. And get a chance to say hi to the guy who actually wrote the book and the book, a book that's having so much impact on his view about his career and what he's doing here.
That's great, Andreas. Congratulations and thank you for joining us. Tell me, how has it impacted your career?
So I think these guys have heard me say this. I'm in my fourth year of being a financial advisor here coming out of grad school, and long way of saying I'm early stages of my career, and I think in those early few years, you're unstructured is probably the best way of saying that. You don't have a very coherent service model. You're kind of just drinking from a fire hose. You're trying to grow your book, and you're most of the time so focused on that you tend to forget about your clients or, you know, do the bare minimum to keep them happy. And, you know, I was craving some just organization and structure around my own practice. Started conversations with Claudia, Sean. They mentioned 12-4-2. I had a New Year's trip to Hawaii. They gave me the book, read it on the plane. You know, the first few chapters about just overcoming resistance and kind of just being open to trying something different was actually relatively easy for me. Just being newer, there wasn't much of a shift needed. It was more just of a starting something. And so I came back from that trip and just took my top 10 clients, got them on board with the idea. Some of them friends and family. It wasn't a hard sell. And after my first, literally my first call or two, those top 10 clients had probably in aggregate added 40 to 50% more assets. So then I became a kind of full on believer that, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably not rocket science. Just, you know, have some structure, call your clients. It doesn't always have to be a meaningful conversation that you're calling because something's burning or something's needed. Sometimes just touching them is enough. And so those have been sort of my early days of success here.
It's a really good story.
Rob, let me just interject one thing. A couple of clients that we had passed over to Andreas that we just said, these are dead assets. You know, you can collect the fee, but there's nothing else here. He actually used the process with them and brought in assets that we had not brought in years. And so I said to him, I think that is profound and powerful and that you need to really understand we're pretty darn good at what it is we do. But A, even when we're neglectful, good things don't happen, which is the same as the bad thing happening. And B, you should be proud of the fact that you were able to step into this in relationships that had talked to people like Sean, myself, and Claudia, at least on and off over the years, and we'd gotten, you know, hadn't maximized those relationships, and he did. So I think in addition to his success with his own book, that to me also speaks volumes to, you know, your plan, your vision, the efficacy of the strategy, and his execution and discipline around it.
Now, Rob, just think for a minute. If you're the manager, right, and you've got all these senior people that don't call their clients, aren't growing, and are stuck, and you guys decide to adopt 12-4-2 and Supernova and the process and call your book and call your good clients, and guess what happens to you? You explode your business. You pass on the clients to somebody like Andreas, and what does he do? He calls the clients and he grows those clients. I mean, you're both winners, but think about as the manager what that means to you. Now, don't pass off this opportunity to share this with your leadership team, because it's a big deal. Okay, I sat there and fought this battle, knowing that this would come out the way it came out for you guys, but not always being able to convince people. And here you guys go to them hand in hand, and I'd take Andreas with you and say, look, if you want us to stand up and talk about this, we're happy to, because this is in everybody's best interest. And when you hoard clients because you're greedy, you end up counting your dollars, and that's all you do. You're like Midas sitting there counting your money. Whereas when you do this, you get a fresh start, and he gets a fresh start, and everybody benefits. So, bless you. Congratulations. This is the way it's supposed to work.
Good. Well, I just wanted to give a full introduction and set the stage, and I will also tell you, Rob, that Andreas is enjoyably unimpressed with kind of his background and things, which is, a primary or a first hurdle you've got to get over with Sean and I and Claudia. You know, don't come in here and try to impress us with who you are. You know, show us what you'll do. But, he had worked and done some internships and worked at, J.P. Morgan in their ultra-high net worth area and also in Morgan Stanley's high net worth area, decided he really wanted to get into the wealth management business and went and got an MBA focused on wealth management. Where was that at? At Cornell?
Wow.
At Cornell. So, he did the things that he needs to do. And what's that?
I've heard of that.
He is
scholarship.
He's put himself in the position to be successful in this business. He's done those things, and now you add those practical aspects to it, and I think he's going to do really well. And one of the things that we're going to be doing, and I would just like to get your thoughts on this, is that one of the big areas that's been a big driver of our business in the past, Wells Fargo has a group called the Legal Specialty Group. The Legal Specialty Group focuses on top 100 law firms and banks, both the firms and the partners. I would say a good number of our biggest clients come out of that area. Chicago, but D.C. and New York, I think, are a bit unusual. Maybe L.A.'s got this as well, where top guys at big law firms are, kind of pro athlete money, $5 to $10 million a year kind of guys and gals.
Yep.
And so that's a really great fertile hotbed for us. But the problem that we had is that, if they've got 1,000 clients, because they bank every partner, 5 of them make sense for us to work with. So we were in a position where we were asking them to let us cherry pick the very best deals, and it wasn't helping them grow their practice because they've got their own goals and objectives and things. And so one of the things that we needed to do is figure out how do we have more bandwidth to be able to go out and go on meetings with them and make presentations and observe what, really be there to talk about, what we can help them with in the wealth management area. And so one of the things that we're going to do with Andreas is that he is going to be, kind of the mass market aspect of our LSG approach. So if they've got a client or a prospect and they don't really know what they have, Andreas is going to go to the meeting because Sean and I and Claudia don't have time to do that. And the deal that we've made with him is, we're going to kind of bifurcate things. Anything under, a couple million bucks is just going to go his way. That is what it is, or a million and a half, whatever it is. Kind of in that million and a half to three, we're going to have a joint number where we'll kind of share them. If it's 3 to 4 to 5 and it looks like it's really complex and it needs what Sean and I and Claudia do, that we'll probably move that into our number. But then what we'll do is we'll give him a corresponding amount of revenues and accounts and things that we have that should be moved down there. So we'll continually be upgrading our book, and his book will be upgraded simultaneously. And we may reach a point where Andreas says, hey, I'm confident enough now. I don't want to do that split anymore. I want to try to tackle those deals on my own, or, you know, we figure out how to fold them in more. But so that's kind of our approach, and I just would like your reaction to that. What do you see as good about it, bad about it? What are the pitfalls that we may want to make sure we're managing around?
I really like it. And the thing that I would suggest is that Andreas find his own Andreas. That's the idea, is that we do stair steps to the stars, and that if you have a buddy or somebody that you think is a little behind you, he's 2 years in the business or she's 2 years in the business, but you're confident they're going to stay in the business, that would be a person for you to pass off clients to. Now, you think at this stage, no, I'm never going to have that situation. Well, if we do this right, you're going to have that situation pretty quick. And you want to have the ability to deliver just what Rob is delivering to his clients and Sean and the team. You want to be able to give that 12-4-2 service and still have time to grow. And if you're bogged down with little accounts, you're going to get stuck too. So I wouldn't wait very long till you or Rob or somebody together come up with the third person in this stair step to the stars model. And then you move up a rung, and then move them up a rung, and then bring in a third person, and so forth, until you guys have got just a great little in-office business that's interdependent. And yeah, someday you might all get together and form a team, but you don't need to, because you're all working like a team, but you're separate and independent and feel pretty good about yourselves and all that. So that would be my advice in this particular model, as we've you know, seen it work and dreamt about it and thought about it, and it is really valuable to everybody. And the key is to not let your ego in and not become too greedy, and be honest and fair. And if you do that, then everybody wins big time, as if you're just a big law firm. So it's a lot of fun.
So, Rob, the one thing that I was just talking to Andreas, and we were talking a little bit about how we start to transition him to kind of be that triage person. And I was talking to him a little bit about the value, broadly the value propositions that Sean and I used to start the conversation. But the one thing that as I was doing that struck me will be potentially a challenge for him, is that I don't ever feel a need to credentialize myself or Sean. I mean, you know, we're on every list, Barron's, Forbes, whatever, we're running, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, kind of you called us, we didn't call you, and I don't mean that in that way, but I don't feel the need to say, let me tell you a little bit about how I got here. Andreas being a bit newer to the firm and a bit newer in the industry, I think he may want to do that, and what I was kind of thinking about is just something along the lines, again, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, is that, you know, he could say, you know, appreciate the time to meet with you. What I really want to do is to get to know you and to talk about you and tell you a little bit about what we do for clients. Just let me really briefly tell you that, you know, I have spent a number of years in the industry. I have spent time at J.P. Morgan's ultra high net worth space. I spent time in the same capacity at Morgan Stanley. And as I really observed the business and worked in the business, I decided that I really had a passion for wealth management, and I really wanted to make that my career. So what I decided to do was to make sure that I maximized my ability to deliver high levels of service to my clients and to be successful myself. I went to school and got an MBA at, Cornell in wealth management. After I had finished that work, I went back to Morgan Stanley for a period of time and then saw an opportunity here at Wells Fargo that I decided to seize upon and have been here for the last several years. Boom, that's it. I got an MBA from Cornell in wealth management. I worked at JP. I worked at Morgan Stanley. I've been here for a number of years. You should listen. You should care what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you think of that? So my two questions is, A, what do you think of that? And then the other thing that I was thinking about is how do you then weave in that I work with a broader team that's got folks that have been around here for, 35 years, and they're, have one focus. We're blessed to have a great chief investment person who has, run billions of dollars for institutions as well as our clients, and so on and so forth. So credentialize himself, make it clear at the front that he's part of a broader team that these folks are all going to have access to. That's all I need to say. Now let's talk about you. Is that necessary? Is it unnecessary? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good question and one that is always a battle for all of us. When I go to give a speech, I never talk about me, right? So who talks about me? If I do it right, the person that's introducing me brags about me and tells them all about me. So in keeping with that theme, who should brag about Andreas is who's ever introducing him.
Correct.
So if you're introducing him, you take care of that ahead of time. So there always should be somebody introducing you, if you can do it. If you can't, you take a minute and just to let you know that, I've spent a lot of time in the industry. I may, look youthful, but I've really worked hard to make sure that I'm very proficient in our industry, and kind of like having a newly minted physician, I have the latest and the greatest. I may not have as much experience as some, but I have a lot of knowledge. So, you really don't want to spend much time. Ego is a hard thing to project. You want to project humility rather than ego. And at the same time, you want them to feel credibility is one of the six essential things that you need to help somebody, convince somebody to do something, make a decision. They got to feel as though you have credibility. And so how do you establish that? The very best is having someone else speak for you. And that's where I like the idea. When we talk, and this is a little version of what we've talked about. What we've said in the past is when you introduce a center of influence to your team, you get up and introduce yourselves through the five-star model. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is my role and responsibility. I just thought about? Wouldn't it be better if each person stood up, the leader stood up and introduced the next person and told what he does and or what she does, how she does it, and her credentials, and then she introduces the next person, what they do, how they do it, and their credentials, and then they talk a little about what they do. And then so forth. So you're never introducing yourself. You're always being introduced by somebody else. And that gives you a chance as the leader or as the next person in line to brag about your associate. So even in that situation, Andreas could be, even though he's not a part of your team, he could be in on that meeting. And so when you're talking to a law firm about capacity to deal with larger numbers, here would be Andreas and his associate who handle the larger numbers of clients. So, we will handle the senior partners, et cetera, but Andreas will handle others and junior partners and so forth. So we have the capacity to serve your entire firm. So that, and then somebody brag about Andreas at that point. I think it's a really brilliant moment we're having here in terms of not bragging about ourselves. So think about that and how you do that in different situations.
Yeah, and I love what you just said about the capacity to serve your entire firm, because that feeds in perfectly to LSG's business model, because what they recognize is the biggest part of their profit driver is the lending and the treasury management thing and all those things to the firm. Therefore, if you are a voting partner, you are important to them, whether you have a lot of assets under management with this team or not.
Right. Right.
So I think that's
it's like the 401k business. You know, it's like the 401k business or any business where you're having to deal, you're making a trade-off. You're having to deal and serve the company and all their employees, and yet you really only want to deal with the top people. So you need to build out a team that can handle it so that you make them happy and they feel like their clients are being served. At the same time, you're still getting what you want. And guess what? You've got the people there. Everybody has to act as a team, though, and there has to be trust, complete transparency, and total trust. And there can't be any, you know, behind the back, you know, oh, I'll open this account with him, but then any further accounts I open, I'm going to keep. If you're going to do that, you got to let everybody know, and then let them know when it's happening. So you don't have this, you know, sneaky Pete stuff.
Well, you know, the other place this works so well, and the reason I'm so happy we're talking about this, is one of the things I've looked at and I've noticed with our clients, our bigger clients, is many of our clients have three families. They have their actual family, and that's their, you know, nucleus immediate family. And then they have what I would refer to as their extended family. And mm-hmm. this not only maybe extends to siblings, nieces, cousins, nephews, you know, fourth, whatever, but often it's friends who are family to them. They're closer to many of their friends than they are their family. And then the other area is lots of them have their work family. And these are people that help them, I'm thinking of business owners now, that help them build these businesses, who without them, they wouldn't be in a position to be selling or to be doing this or be doing that. And I've often thought the ability to go to a business owner who's getting ready to sell his business and say to them, Rob, here's what I've learned in my long time working with business owners, is that they certainly have a very high focus on their family and their immediate family and so on and so forth. But I've also observed that people have both their extended family and then their work family. And they're the people that help them build this business, and they want to see any kind of transaction or anything, make sure that these people are taken care of, that they're looked after, and that they have somebody who's helping them. We've created a team and a structure that gives us the capacity to take care of all of the people that are important to you.
Oh, it's very powerful. Because think about it. If you hand these people a pot of money, it's no different than handing an NFL player a pot of money, and in 3 years, it's all gone.
Yep.
Right? So what's his real obligation? Is it to get them the pot of money? Or is it to make sure that they have the advice and guidance once that pot of money is given to them, that it's still there 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years later?
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's – and, you know, if he cares about them, which most of people do, this is a very impressive structure. So everybody, Rob, I would err on the side of generosity, which I think you do anyway, in order to make this, you know, giving Andres and the rest of the people the upside, because I think it's worth it to you, okay, to have their resources.
I agree. And, you know, the one thing, though, we did tell Andres is that we're going to do our best to be generous, to be, you know, good partners and this, that, and the other thing. But you always have to be leery and somewhat suspicious of brokers bearing gifts. So we've also said we're going to be completely brutally honest with you. These
right.
don't fit the mold. This one is just a pain in the ass. So you got to take some longs and some shorts, brother.
Right. And you know, you can do the same thing, Andreas. You can find them homes, or you can kick them out, okay? So you decide. They're yours once you let them know this guy is a jerk, and I'm going to find him a new home. I think that's a good point. Rob, you don't want to just be giving them junk either. I mean, you know.
I don't think it is not a thing where we're looking to offload junk. I mean, we've got really good clients. I will leave it to Andreas to say if he's ran into that. But there are going to be those occasionally, and to your point, I think as long as we're honest and candid and tell him up front, there's going to be some of those. Then when we give him one, he's like, well, what the heck? We never talked about this. Say, oh, yeah, we talked about this. And as a matter of fact, we talked about it in front of Rob Knapp. Call him and see if he remembers.
It's recorded.
Good.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's recorded. Michael said it's recorded. You can listen to it yourself. Have you run across anybody who is overtly problematic?
From you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't pretty.
Well,
those Carlyle investments are just pain in the ass, but those aren't clients. Those are just, there's always a capital call and this and that. But, no, everything from you guys has been great. I've gotten my fair share of junk, you know, from other advisors over these past few years. I think something that sparked our conversations, Rob and Sean might not remember, but I sent a mass email to every financial advisor in our region, and I just said, you know, greetings from your fellow FAIT, and, you know, I'm new to the business. If you remember your first few years as a financial advisor, it wasn't all champagne and caviar. If you have clients that no longer meet your lens, you know, I'm here to help out. Here's a one or two sentence about my background, and just hit full send everyone on BCC. And I picked up a shitload of business, but I actually picked up a even larger shitload of junk.
I was just saying, emphasis, it seems like, might be on shit.
Yeah, so, I mean, but I recognize that, you know, brokers rarely come giving gifts. If you get 10 accounts and two are good, then you probably take that, at least in these early few stages.
Oh, that's how you learn. You got expertise, right?
Sure. And actually, some of the ones that were, to even start as an FAIT, you have to be seeded $15 million in assets. It's just a checkbox compliance requirement. So before my very first day, I was given $15 million of what was known as dead assets from Doug Geraci, Bill Orlando, two senior advisors here. And brokers don't just give gifts to someone they don't even know. So these were considered absolute trash. And I would say of that $15 million, I probably converted 7, 8, maybe a little bit more to revenue-generating assets or, you know, some annuity products. And those were huge drivers into even the revenue that I have now. So sometimes trash is trash. Sometimes trash is gold.
Well, you went in and you actually called them. You're saying here now, I think to Rob's point, that if you succeeded in converting 20% of those clients into a true, you know, advisory-based client, you now have to transition another 80% to somebody who's coming up behind you.
Sure.
And if someone's in that role is going to look to you before they look to one of us.
Right.
Because we haven't gone through that specific role. That natural progression is where you need to go.
Sure. So I think I've been segmenting out quote-unquote junk throughout. I've not been a hoarder, you know, someone with an A share that's paying $300 in trails. I mean, as an FAIT, $300 is actually something, but I've kind of recognized that, I mean, there's junk and then there's just absolute trash. So I have a pretty lean book, I would say. It can always be leaner, but it's not, I don't have 500 households, you know, where 400 are under 50,000. So I have capacity, I have time, and hope to fill that.
Good. Yeah, it's important that you stay lean. And that's why I say even find another guy that you respect that you think you could bring along.
Sure.
That gives you capacity, too, and a place to send clients. And, you know, I've always said that our job is not to fire people. Our job is to find people the proper home. And so when we talk about segmentation, we talk about firing them and kick them out of the plane and all stuff. It's not really our message. Our message is to find them a home that's a good fit. And fit's a great word, by the way. A good fit for them. And that everybody understands that. And that's all they want. When someone refers someone to you, you should always talk to them, and you should, as best you can, find them a good fit rather than saying, I'm sorry, you're too small. That never goes over well. And then you go back to the person and you explain what happened and make sure they understand what your minimums are, but that you did take care of their friend and that he's going to be in good shape.
Yeah. I mean, we have call centers. You know, we have our WSA
right.
solutions. So whether we find a new Andreas right away, I mean, there are dumping ground sounds very negative, but there are places where some of these smaller accounts can just be segmented out to right away, and they're probably better served with a 1-800 advisor than having someone like me who the minimum trade I can place is $55, you know.
Right.
Doesn't the firm like really ding you guys if you have an account under a certain dollar level? Isn't that starting that crazy low?
So under $100,000, your payout's a flat 10%.
Yeah, so you're really looking for $250,000 above and $500,000 and above and that kind of thing.
That's household.
Let me switch the topic if I can, because we had a good call last session, and I wanted to get back and see how that went and what's any progress on that, because I don't want to ignore it or pretend that it was just another session. We talked about the scheduler, the funnel, the spreadsheet, the opportunity spreadsheet. So did you work with that or come up with something? Did Sean get on that, or what's the status of that?
Yeah, Rob, Andreas and I are going to work on that together. So
good.
Have started to work that out and figure that out. And the other thing that then precipitated is it then precipitated understanding, and as I talked to Sean and Claudia about it, they said, you're whistling past the graveyard. There's no chance in hell this is going to happen, not while you've got all this other stuff hanging fire and you've got this, that, and the other thing. So they were successful in getting the firm to bring in a summer intern. Well, I guess they don't call them intern, but a part-time summer college person to work for us. So
yes,
we're in the process of developing a system that will get rid of all the paper to the best of our ability in my office, all the scattered stuff that I do, and we'll create a bit of a tracking system for tasks and for 12-4-2 and for all those other things, because what we really talked about is let's not go create a bunch of unrelated, kind of unintegrated tracking systems and everything else, but let's have a business strategy, a business development strategy that then will funnel them straight down into 12-4-2. And let's be able to take tasks off of the 12-4-2 calls and funnel them straight over to the tasks and the relationships and all those other things. So it has really sparked a recognition that we need to streamline the practice one more time. You know, Claudia talked about the fact that the first big thing that we did is we tackled 12-4-2, and a lot of things grew out of that, and as we got more efficient and more evolved into it, that we got bigger lifts and we realized more and more the size and the scope of the job, and that really what we need to do now is to take a step back and say, okay, 12-4-2 did some great things, but it also created a lot of extra paper, extra follow-up, extra notes, extra tasks, extra this and extra that, and are we really getting those integrated as well as we should? And the answer was no. And so then the next question is, so you guys are going to go out and build a spreadsheet to build in, bring in a bunch of more people so we can have a lot more, you know, challenges and chaos. And so we said, no, let's do this the right way.
Okay. I'm not going to accept that, but that's okay.
I'm with you too, because I just want to charge forward and just bolt more things on. but what I would say to you is if we get 40 to 50% done in the next 30 days of what I think Claudia and us are thinking we can get done, I think you may be as much of a believer as I was, because I was with you. I was like, no, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to put our head down and go. And by the way, we're doing that as well. So it's not like we've stopped that. And it's not like.
No, I know. I know.
And it's not as if we don't have the beginnings of the spreadsheet put together. But if you said to me, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think you are in the iteration of it now, I'd say 2 or 3.
Okay, that's okay. So, Andres, you can do this. You're smart. Help them if you want to. I mean, I think it's a good idea for all of you guys. And I would do it based on each person that's in the marketing business. So each one can have their own little spreadsheet of, you know, leads, suspects, prospects, customers, clients, advocates, and ambassadors. And then, but I'm really interested in having a kind of a forensic picture of what it looks like as soon as possible, because I want to see, you know, how many ambassadors you actually have, how many clients you have versus customers. And yep. Then I'm not as interested in the prospects at this point, although I am. That can be a part of it that you sort of, you know, delegate to Andreas or Sean or somebody else. But the customer, clients, advocates, and ambassadors, I think is something we got to move forward with.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, allocating time for tasks and follow up, and I mean, that's just part of what you do every day. So I don't see that as a particular conflict, unless it's a disaster and you're way, way behind.
It's not a disaster, but it's the what do they call those? A barometric depression in the African off the African coast.
Okay, get caught up then. Go get caught up, because we got work to do here. Come on.
Yeah, and I will also tell you, Sean and Claudia, since they have a huge hand in this, in terms of managing the portfolios, but also with some of the new AUM and stuff that came on in Q1, I think we just posted our biggest base quarter ever, didn't we?
We were above December's mark by like $4,000, so all-time high.
So what was
that? Yeah,
that's
good.
Post?
287, 288.
So, Rob, our recurring monthly now is, call it 290, it's 288.
Wow, that's
300.
It's actually 302 when I add on everything. That's just the advisor.
So we're at 300,000 a year in recurring. Does that include alternative trails?
No.
So three million, 300 a year, so 3.6 in recurs, and then what would you guess all that for that a year?
Another 200.
So we're at 3.8. So basically, you know, market stays stable. If we trade sideways like we did going into the 16 election, we all said we're going to take the election year off. The portfolio audit, the book ought to do 3.8 million. So that's.
Yeah, that's a business. There's a lot of moving parts. I understand. I'm just I'm your coach and. I'm looking for progress.
I don't want to pass. I can get a pass for free. I'm not going to pay you to give me a pass.
No, you're doing wonderfully. I just want you. I'm really excited about this idea. I'm trying it out on a bunch of teams. I'm coming up with really interesting variations on the model, because I ask people that I make it pretty clear what I want, and then they produce it, and then it doesn't look exactly the same each time, which is interesting because people see different things and want slightly different things from it. And I'm really kind of excited about, you know, kind of putting together a composite of the best practices of what it should look like. Anyway, it's an engineer's brain, you know, operating in a sales business. It's kind of funny and fun, but anyway, so I want you guys, I want your input.
I can appreciate that because, as you know, as you said, 12-4-2, it's not hard to do, but it's hard to consistently do over time.
Right.
Because it can be very mundane. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, that we do is try to, you know, sprinkle in new ideas here and there. So, you know,
yeah.
I for one will say that, you know, I appreciate that, because if you keep just doing the basic 12-4-2, that's, I think, where people would probably stop doing it, because it can become monotonous. But, you know, adding a little piece here or there makes it more interesting over time.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, that's why we have the 24-month calendar, to keep you guys sharp and creating new new information for the clients and new educational opportunities for them. And let's face it, everybody's situation is changing constantly in this kind of environment, especially when you're working with wealthy people. There's just a lot of moving parts for each one of them. And you guys have got all the tools, so you're constantly having to probe them, you know, what's on your mind, what's really on your mind, you know, well, I've got to help my daughter buy a house, you know, and what can I do, and how should I do it without giving her the money? And you can help, you know, you can come up with great solutions for them and save them from embarrassing and troubling situations. So there's all kinds of stuff you can do, that's the fun of what, you know, we're half psychologists, half financial advisors, you know, we're life coaches as well as financial coaches. So, you know, a lot of good things.
Michael added something this month that would potentially, you know, keep us out of hot water down the road, is making sure to alert the clients as to who their IRA beneficiaries are. And through a lot of these calls, we've recognized that there were some incorrect names listed on those forms. So that's a potential issue that could have come up later down the road, but something that we're going through the entire book with right now. And clients are finding that and appreciating it.
No, it's really critical because, you know, we kid about it, but, you know, it was the beneficiary on that old life insurance policy is the wife of two marriages ago, you know. So you don't want necessarily to ignore beneficiaries, and that's why we devote a couple of months to just focusing on beneficiaries of annuities and life insurance and IRAs and, you know, everything, all kinds of benefit, anything that involves a beneficiary. Are you sure you have the ones that you want? And that's where we really make a difference. When people are doing their estate planning and, you know, they write up all the forms, but they never see it get followed through on.
Yep.
So, you know, the retitling, it's not done. So anyway, good work. And I know it's not easy, and I know there's a lot of follow-up to it, and it's a pain, but I'd like to see this. This can be your Monday morning meeting, this spreadsheet. On where you are in terms of moving people from the left-hand column to the right-hand column. So I think it's something you got to make time for. So please work on it.
Well, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. I think we covered everything, and look forward to our next session.
Rob, quick question here. 1242, I think, gets presented a lot as a service model, and if you have a robust service model that leads to business development as you uncover opportunities like I've seen myself, would you apply 1242 to, you know, maybe your COIs or, you know, your one friend at the country club? You know, sort of.
You have one friend at your country club?
I don't even belong to a country club, but.
Or have one friend.
Yeah. I'll tell that one. I can't even hit a ball. So I guess, would you expand 1242 to be more outside your book, you know, just as a way of structure and organization as far as, again, looking outside of your existing book and clients?
Yeah, Andreas, in the Supernova Multiplier, when you read the chapter on centers of influence, you'll see that I talk about meeting with them as best you can once a month. So you're really doing a 1242 on your centers of influence. And that's the difference between having a process and being the hit or miss. The thing that I found, though, in working with centers of influence over time, in talking with financial advisors who had been very successful with them, it becomes, we think of it as a center of influence with the CPA. And if we call them enough and do enough things for them, they're going to send us business. And I found that that's incorrect. What you have to do is you have to take enough time to make them a friend.
Yeah.
They have to become a legitimate friend. And that's a big difference. And people say, you know, I say to people, how long do you think it takes you to turn someone from an acquaintance into a friend? I mean, how many friends do you really have? And how many will commit, you know, that you're a friend of theirs? And once you get past that, where they actually look, people say to me, I don't want to meet with them once a month. That's too much. I said, if it was your brother, would you? Right. Yeah, I'd love to meet with my brother once a month. Or how about your best friend? Would you have lunch with your best friend once a month? Yes. That's the way your brain has to get around this. So you certainly don't want to pick a center of influence that's a jerk. You right. want to pick somebody that's in a similar situation, life experiences that you have, eager, fun, excited, maybe you went to school with him, blah, blah, blah. Whatever you have in common, you make friends and you meet and you send each other business. That's the way you legitimately do it.
Got
and
you.
It takes years. It takes
yeah.
years. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's very helpful.
Anything less than that is just superficial BS.
Right.
You know, you've got, and it's like when I tell people, you know, what do I do? It get involved with my community. I've been on the board for 7 years and I've never gotten a referral. I said, because the probabilities are you never really committed to them. So you need to totally commit and become president of the organization. And they go, oh my God, that'll take a lot of time. I said, then don't do it.
Yeah.
You either do it right or you don't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, my book, my Supernova Multiplier, should be out on audio this week. I'm waiting, but they had to format it a little differently. And when it is, then start listening to each chapter, you know, on the way to work and the way home from work, the way to work, way home from work, and listen to each chapter maybe 3 or 4 or 5 times, and then move on to the next chapter. Because it takes a while for it to sink in. Even, you know, I don't care how smart you are, it's still a big change, and the words don't come easy, but if you listen to it consistently over time, you'll get the right words, and you'll completely understand what I'm trying to accomplish in each one. And remember, these aren't Rob Knapp's best practices. These are the best practices of some of the smartest people I've ever worked with, and I've coached thousands. So you're only hearing from the very best, in their words, how it worked for them. Okay? So
okay,
that can
great.
Be a
thanks.
Big help to you, Andres. Thank you. Okay,
sure.
guys, thanks. Talk
thanks,
to you
Rob.
Next
that
time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.